Good afternoon. So last time, before the exam, we started talking about pipelining. We had this idea that we divide our circuit into an assembly line of stages, and the big benefit we get from that is that rather than having, say, our instruction memory only acting for part of the cycle, and then we get its result and it does nothing else for the rest of the cycle, we have it do its work, then we'd have it pass on that result through a register to the next part of bunch of work the instruction needed to do, and let the instruction memory work on the next instruction. So it was working all the time, we're wasting all our time having the instruction memory just be holding some values on its output wires that we would use for a lot of other processing. And we divide our circuit into these stages, and while we were doing one stage somewhere, we could do a different instruction's other stage elsewhere, rather than having the whole circuit processing one instruction at a time, we have different parts of the circuit processing different instructions. And we saw that this idea, well, it lets us speed up circuits in the sense that we get better throughput. We do more operations. The operations take longer. One of the reasons they take longer is that we have to add these registers to hold the results of one stage for the next stage. And these registers have a bit of a time cost. And this also means that there's a limit how good things can get. And one source of this limit is just that, well, eventually all our time is taken up by the register delay, the amount of time the register needs to read in the values from its input and stabilize its output to the new values every time we have a clock cycle. And that limited the speed up we could get based on the register delays. And we have another restriction. So last time we were dealing with our multiply times three circuit, and we said, okay, we had it divided into two pieces. And our two stages gave us some speed up. We had some registers in between. We said, let's add some extra registers and see if we can divide it up more. We saw that we have this cost from these extra registers, which meant that in this picture, our cycle time was 35 picoseconds. That's the amount of time each stage needed to go from the output of a register to do its part of the computation and to go into a register and store the result of that for the next stage to use. But we probably can't actually do this. This picture is telling us that we're going to take our adder, divide it in half, each of the halves are going to take the same amount of time to do the computation, and our only extra cost is going to be that this register takes a little bit of time to read values and store them and output them. But probably it's not going to be so great. That maybe we can divide up our adder into two pieces, but they're not going to be pieces of the same size. That instead of dividing up our 50 picosecond adder into a 25 picosecond part and a 25 picosecond part, maybe we end up dividing it up into a 30 picosecond part and a 20 picosecond part because, well, it's, you know, it's has a bunch of parts and doesn't happen to work out that if we put a line through them, we get exactly in the middle anywhere. So if I do this, what's my throughput now? So previously, we were getting, with this circuit, we were getting 1 operation every 35 picoseconds. What are we getting now? How many operations per picosecond do we get here? And I said, doing the same splitting, but now this adder, I can't actually split it up in half quite, so I split it up into 30 and 20 instead of 25 and 25. How much does this hurt us? Yeah. 1 over 40. And where's the 40 from? 30 plus 10. And, okay. 30 plus 10, so 30. So your idea is that we need, this is the time we need to do. Every stage, we need to wait for this slow part of the adder and the register after it. And that even applies even though we have this this next stage here, which, this part we might say, oh, that's 30 picoseconds versus our 40 picosecond stage, but it's going to be the slowest stage which matters. We can't have that 30 picosecond stage take 30 picoseconds if it needs to wait 40 picoseconds to get the next number to use. And it's going to need to wait for the slowest thing, and the same thing is going to happen beforehand. If we have, we might say that with this picture, it looks like 35 picoseconds, but that doesn't matter that that can go faster. That 40 picosecond stage is still going to be as fast as we can go. We can't feed it values faster than it can process them. So we end up getting our overall speed of 1 every 40 picoseconds, or about 25 billion operations a second, right, which is a little worse than we were before, where we had 1 over 35 picoseconds as far. One operation every 35 picoseconds, here we have one operation every 40 picoseconds. And this is generally going to be a problem with trying to do pipelining, is that we're not going to be able to have all our adders be divided exactly in half, especially when we get down to lots and lots of pipeline stages where what's going to be happening in each step is going to be like a few logic operations when we divide things up really deeply. So we end up with diminishing returns because we have uneven division. And it's worse than I showed you on that picture, because typically, we're going to end up having not just an uneven split, but we're going to end up having a little extra time because we're going to divide up the circuit into two pieces. It turns out that in the single cycle version, those pieces would overlap a little bit, and we have to make them not overlap anymore, and we spend a little extra time for that too. So you often end up having the sum of the computation times being worse in total, in addition to being unevenly split. Okay. So any questions about this idea of our cost of R and even splits are? So the key thing is that the longest stage is what matters. We have to wait for it, either wait for it to produce values or wait for it to be ready to take new values. And that's what's going to determine how fast our pipelining actually ends up being. And this is with both the, how we split it up and the extra register delay we have. Okay, so this is our conceptual view of pipelining. Let's now go back to our pipeline stages. And we'll start with our seek stages, our single cycle stages. This is the list the textbook had. And we learned that this was a conceptual order, that this is not actually the order the single cycle processor processes in. In particular, we have a bunch of writes, which are listed as different steps, but in fact all happen at basically the same time, because that's how the processor works. You have a bunch of reads, which happen as values are available, and that might mean that they happen in this order or not, depending on exactly what instruction you're doing and when the values it needs to read or write are around. So when we turn this into pipeline stages, we're going to make some changes, and we're going to actually now make it so these happen in this order. And the way that's going to happen is that we're going to have registers in between that force us to not move the instruction to the next stage until we collected its results from the previous stage and sent them on to the next one. So now these will be actual stages. This will be an actual order that things happen in, not just sort of a conceptual division. And when we're doing this, we've made some changes. One big change, which is that here I have fetch at the beginning, PC update at the end. Now I have one stage I've labeled fetch / PC update. And the reason we did this is that we want to do something in the fetch stage every cycle. And what does the fetch stage do? It reads the instruction memory at the PC. We need to know what the PC is all the time. So we're going to compute the PC really early, as early as we can, so we have it available for the next cycle. Because if we don't do that, well, no, we have these extra stages, we can't do anything with them, we don't know what to do yet. That's going to be our big change, that we didn't want to do the PC update immediately. Now, if you're thinking carefully about all the instructions we have in our single cycle processor, you might say, wait, don't some of these instructions need information from the register file or the ALU or the memory to actually figure out what the PC is? And the answer is yes. We will deal with this problem later. For now, we will ignore that problem until we have to deal with it. So let's do a simplified example here. I'm going to pipeline a version of our single cycle processor that only does adds, which conveniently means I don't need to worry about any of the instructions where figuring out what the next program counter is hard. All we have to do is add to the length of an add instruction. That's how we find it, so we don't have that problem. And how I'm going to start this is I have my processor that only does adds, because if we only do adds, I've hard-coded the input to the destem to be 15, because we never use that to write. You know, I don't have any muxes here. It's all hard-coded logic, because there's only one instruction. There's no complication. So first, I'm going to draw boxes where all my stages are. So I have my fetch and PC update. That includes the instruction memory, splitting up the instruction, and the actual add to the PC. I have my decode, which is reading from the register file. I have my execute, which is my ALU, which is only doing adds, always doing adds. And I have my write back, which is writing to the instruction. And if you remember what we did to pipeline before, is that basically we're going to draw a line between each of these stages in the order, and we're going to put registers across that line. But we have a problem. That if I just do that here, I'm going to get a little bit of a wrong answer. And that's because we want to take values from our fetch stage, pass them to our decode stage, then to our execute stage, then to our write back stage. And as this is drawn now, I'm passing one value in the wrong way. Can anyone tell me what that is? Yeah.
Desti.
So I'm passing Desti from fetch to write back. And the rule is that when we do pipelining, we pass results from one stage to the next one, because that's where that instruction is going to be in the next stage. It's not going to be when we fetch an instruction, it goes to decode next, it doesn't go to decode and write back next. And that's what this picture would do if we just drew lines in the obvious way. So I'm going to take our signal that skips over some stages, and I'm going to redraw it so it doesn't. So same picture, I just redrew that line to be a lot more complicated, just so it goes through every stage, so we never violate this rule that we go from one stage to the next one on our list. You might also notice I don't have a memory stage here. That's just to keep things simpler, because we don't care about what happens in the memory stage. We'll add it back later. Okay, so now I fixed that up. And now I'm just going to draw my lines between each of the stages. So I'm going to say, here we go, here's one line. Here's one line. I guess I should do like here, including that. Here's another line. I'm going to draw the lines between the stages, because that separate them. And every wire which crosses each of those lines, I'm going to put a pipeline register there. Because we're not going to want to have the values go immediately. We want to save them when the stage is done and have them available in the next cycle. And so I end up with registers in all those places. And there's my pipeline processor. Yeah?
In the previous picture, there was a line going from this function n to add.
This is, sorry, that was, this is poor drawing on my part, and that line actually, this is this wire which goes here down to there. I should move that over very slightly. So here's our pipeline processor. So let's look at what how this operates. When we do that. Well, first, some naming convention. So I'm going to call these sets of registers by these names. So we have a register from fetch to decode. I'm going to call that the fetch decode registers. Registers from decode to execute, call it decode execute. From execute to write back, call it execute to write back. And I'll sometimes label the PC register as fetch to fetch because it's sending a value from one fetch stage to the next one. And this is our exception for going from one pipeline stage to the next because this is a case where we want to communicate a value to a different instruction. That we take one instruction and it tells us what the next one to run is. That's why we don't go from fetch to decode. You go from fetch to fetch to do that. So the next fetch stage is informed by the previous one. So let's walk through what happens when I'm running this program here with two instructions, add R8, R9, and add R10, R11 on this processor. So first, we fetch, we have the address of 1 sent to the instruction memory, so that's our initial PC, hopefully. And so the instruction memory is outputting the instruction, add Q R8 R9, and we're going to extract from that 8 and 9. At the same time, we compute the address of the next instruction by adding 2, and that's the input to the PC. So when we have our rising edge of the clock, we have righty on here, we have 8 and 9. So sitting on the inputs to our registers, we have the address of instruction 2 ready to go into the PC. We have number 8 ready to go into that source A feeding register, and 9 ready to go into that source B feeding register. So then we have our rising edge of the clock happens, and now we're reading from the instruction, the next instruction, and at the same time, these two registers, because we inputted 8 and 9 to them previously, are now outputting 8 and 9. So while we're reading the second instruction, we're outputting 8 and 9 here. So the register file during this cycle is going to read 8 and 9, and we're going to get the values of 8 and 9 out here. So this is going to be the value of R8, and this is going to be the 8, and this is going to be the value of R9. Being input to those registers, and we're also going to feed the register number 9 into this extra register, which we're going to need later on when we write back the result. And at the same time, we're inputting our register numbers for the next instruction here. So when our rising edge of the clock happens, we end this cycle, we're going to store the values we read from the register file in our decode execute registers, and that's for instruction 1. And behind that, we have instruction 2, where we're going to store the register numbers that it needs to read in the next cycle. So then we move on, and now we're outputting our values for instruction 1 into our adder. And at the same time, we're reading registers 10 and 11 for instruction 2. So here, we have being input the actual result of the addition, adding R8 and R9, and also the register number 9 that we're going to need to use in the next cycle to write back the result to our register file. At the same time, for instruction 2, while we're computing instruction 1's result, instruction 2 is reading our 10 and our 11 from the register file. Okay, so And in the next cycle, we're going to actually write back the results for 1. So we'll have the actual value of R8 plus the value of R9 as the input here and 9 here while we're adding R10 and R11. So any questions on what goes on here? So note that we have the first instruction gets to the write back stage first. And the other instructions, which are later in the program, follow behind it. So questions on Kevin's, yeah.
So the reason why in the sequential one, we go directly from split to the destination is that if you do it that way, you can't do parallel.
So the reason, so you're asking about the reason why we did this. So if we just sent this, if we just wired this directly to DestD, then now when we're writing back the result for instruction 1, we have the result value for instruction 1 here, but we'd have the DestD for instruction 3. And we need to consider this value and this register number as a pair. They need to live together. So we need to keep them together from the beginning. So other questions? Okay. So one way you can represent this execution, so here I have a little longer program where I'm saying all my registers are initially R8 is 800, R9 is 900, and so on. And I can write out just what are the values being output by each of the registers. I just listed out all the registers, and I have during cycle 0, the PC is outputting 0, and the other registers we don't know, hopefully not something important. During cycle 1, our PC is outputting 2, which means that during cycle 0, its input was 2, like we showed. And our fetch and decode registers are outputting 8 and 9, which means during this cycle we will read 800 and 900, so during the next cycle they appear. And you can see that each instruction steps through executing over the course of 4 cycles. And we can see its values that are stored in the pipeline registers, or the PC, during each of those cycles, and that's how we can follow where it goes through. We have to have those values stored there. That's how we know what instruction we're running. Either we know it's from the PC if we're in the fetch stage, or if we're in decode or execute, we know it from the pipeline registers that come before the stage that tell us what we need to do based on what the previous stage figured out. So in our decode execute stage, our previous stage figured out here are the values you need to add, and here's the place you're going to need to put it eventually. And that's what we're fed when we're executing that part, that instruction in our execute stage. And so this applies to all the instructions. They just step through one step at a time. And this means that when the pipeline gets full here, that during cycle 3, we're reading this add R9, R8, while we're fetching R12 and R13, while we're adding R10 and R11, and while we're writing back 1700 to R9 for the add of R8 and R9. Any questions about what happens here? Okay. So here's our pipeline processor, and hopefully we've made things, yeah, sorry.
So I guess like if we were making a processor that only did add queue, this is like a more inefficient method because it would take 4 clock cycles and the third would still be like one.
So the question is, how fast is this? So happily, that's our next topic. And I haven't told you enough to know if it's substantially faster. Hopefully it is. But we need more information to know this, and we need to know in particular, like, how fast is the register file? How fast is the adder? How much time will the registers we add for pipelining take? So let's hear, I have some completely made up time, so I'm gonna say that this add to box takes 80 picoseconds, that once it has a stable input, 80 picoseconds later, its output is stable and has the result of adding 2. Before that, the output's changing while the circuitry is computing the result. Our instruction memory, once we've given the address we want to read from, it takes 200 picoseconds to give us that value. Our register file read, that is when we get a value in source A, it takes 125 picoseconds for it to come out on source on the R of source A. And our add, we say it takes 100 picoseconds, and our register file write, we're saying takes 125 picoseconds. So once we have these inputs here, they need 125 picoseconds in the clock cycle for that to work. That probably works out to be being something like, in order to use this register file, you need to have the register number and the value be staying the same for the 125 picoseconds up to the end of the clock cycle. And if you wanted to figure out how fast this is, well, first we need to know, well, how fast was it without pipelining? If we didn't have these pipeline registers, how fast is it? And this matters, here is the slowest path. So without pipelining, our slowest path is going to be that we need to have take a value from the PC, through the instruction memory, through the register file, through the adder, and back through the register file to write back. So we have to do, if we look at this stage, we're doing 1, then 2, then 3, then 4. So why did I include the add to? Why am I just counting up everything that I've listed here but the add to, even though the add to, in fact, takes time? It's not free. Why do I not include that in the amount of time our single cycle processor takes? Yeah?
I feel like without pipelining, all the work that we're trying to do is like in one cycle. And just to just go through every stages other than adding two.
So we're right, we're going to fit it all in one cycle. Why isn't add two part of the time we need for that cycle? Why am I not?
Isn't it because after all the stages, like you said, being lost?
So it was at the end of our list, but an important thing for figuring out why this is the case is that it's not actually the last thing that happens in the clock cycle, most likely. Yeah. Yes?
Because you're not relying on the output of add two to start the instruction memory step, so it can kind of do its own thing while it starts.
Yeah, so we're in fact going to be waiting for the add two, but our timeline is going to be that we're doing the add two, and we're also, at the same time, we're doing the instruction memory, and then we're doing the register file read, and then, and so on. And yeah, the add two took 80 picoseconds, but that was 80 picoseconds while we were also reading from the instruction memory. So because we could do them both at the same time, the hardware is just when the input changes, it's going to do something. That we don't need to wait to start the add two until the instruction memory is done. And it's going to happen while the instruction memory read happens. And we're going to hide that time because we're going to do it while the instruction memory read happens. And the general rule is that we worry about the critical path, the slowest path through the circuit, the slowest path from, basically from register or memory to register or memory. And our slowest path in this case is from the PC all the way to the register file at the end. That is the slowest path we have to worry about, and that's what determines it. There are other paths, like the path from the PC back to the PC, but that's not the slowest one, and that means that's going to happen in parallel with the slowest path, because it's not a dependency. And we're going to use the same principle when we figure out, well, how long does the pipelining take? Is that we want the slowest path through any stage. So it's going to be the same idea. What's the slowest path from a register to another register or memory? And we want, what's the slowest for any stage? Because the slowest stage determines how fast we can go. So we have our we'll do this in a different color. We have our, this is in our fetch stage, our decode, our execute, and our write back. And in our fetch stage, we have two paths. We have one path, which is from the instruction memory to these registers after it. And that takes 200 picoseconds. And we have another path, which is from our PC through the add to back to the PC, which takes 80 picoseconds. Well, the one which matters is the 200. We're going to have to spend 200 picoseconds. And the 80 picoseconds, it's going to happen, but it's going to happen while we're doing the instruction memory stuff, because those are different paths that are independent of each other. They can work at the same time. Our decode stage, the slowest path is through the register file to here. Even though we have this other path where we just go from register to register, so that's going to be 125 picoseconds. Or zero, we're going to take 125. We're not going to worry about the zero one, because that will happen at the same time as we're reading the register file. And similarly for add, that's going to take the 100 picoseconds and our register write. And we worry about the slowest of all of these. So the slowest stage in this case is our fetch stage, because we have that 200 picoseconds. So it's going to be 200 picoseconds, which is the fetch, which is slowest path. And we also need the register delay. So when I accounted for this, I didn't account for how long does the PC register take, how long does the registers that store source A and source B take. We need to add that, and we know every pipeline stage either ends or starts with the registers, so we always add whatever the register delay is to that. So if we had, you know, 10 picosecond register delay, this would be 210 picoseconds per instruction. So, question is this faster? Well, it depends whether we care about throughput or latency. If we cared about latency, of course it isn't faster, because I unevenly split this. I'm taking 800 picoseconds plus the register delays, four of them, to execute one instruction versus 550, because I have split things unevenly by just insisting that my instruction memory is one stage, even though it's not a quarter of the time I spent in my single cycle processor. But as far as throughput goes, previously we were doing one every 550 picoseconds, now we're doing one every 200 and change, like 210 if we have a 10 picosecond register delay. And so it's like a little more than three times as fast. A little more than two times as fast, which is a lot less than four times as fast, which we might expect because there's four pipeline stages, but it's still a lot better than we started out with. So any questions about calculating our times here? Yeah.
Is the 800 picosecond latency is because you have four cycles, so you have to do it four times.
The question is the 800 because we have four cycles? Yes. So we have to, every instruction has to do the fetch, then it's decode, then it's execute, then it's write back before it's finished.
Wouldn't that be 550 times four instead of 200 times four?
This is, with pipelining, we do each stage in 200 picoseconds. So the stages which are slower than 200 picoseconds, we slow down because we can't give them work fast enough, or their work can't be taken fast enough. So every stage takes exactly 200 picoseconds, no matter how much work it actually has to do, plus the register delays, and that's how we determine speed. And we need to do, every instruction needs to do four stages. With the single cycle processor, there's no stages to worry about, so it's just 550 once. Other questions? Okay, so we've seen building our processor. I'd like to make a note about pipeline register naming. This is partly because our textbook names the pipeline registers this way, and I wanted to make sure you know what that is, so when you're reading the code snippets in the textbook, you aren't totally confused. Also, this is most likely how you'll name registers when you're doing HCL stuff. So our textbook's convention is that the registers from a stage are named starting with the lowercase letter name of the stage. The letter the pipeline registers going to a stage are named with the uppercase letter of a stage. So we have our value of RA coming from the fetch stage is named little f underscore RA. The output of that register, which is going to the decode stage, is named big D underscore RA. And that's the convention our textbook uses. Similarly, for DESD, coming from the decode stage is named little d. DESD going to the execute stage is named big E. The one coming from execute is little e, and so on. This means that in HCLRS, we're declaring this as register FD is our fetch to decode, and register DE is our decode to execute, and so on. So any questions about this naming? I guess another notable thing about this naming convention, which is actually good, is that within a stage, all the values we're using start with the letter of the stage. So in the code, we're using all things that start with a D. Our inputs are big D, our outputs are little d. Okay, so given that naming convention and this hint about, well, how do we declare registers to do that, this from to register banks, register FD for from decode, sorry, from fetch to decode, that gives us, this is what our HCL might look like for our ADQ processor. And I'm omitting the stuff that deals with the PC, which you've already written for prior assignments. So we get our RA and RB in fetch, and we send them to the pipeline registers. Previously, you'd send them to like reg source A, reg source B. We don't do that because that's not part of the fetch stage. But we need that information from fetch, so we're going to send it to those pipeline registers that go from fetch to decode. And then I'm going to read that value in decode. I'm going to read that value in decode, first to send to the next pipeline stage, and also to read from RA, from source A, and send that value to the execute stage. And I'm going to do the same thing for source B. I'm going to read from D of RB. I'm going to send the result I get from the register file into the val B pipeline register. So in execute, I can read from those pipeline registers during the next cycle, not right away, and handle the add part of this instruction. So any questions on the organization here? We're good. Okay. So something else to note is that I've carefully set the default values for my registers to be things that don't do anything. So I set RA and RB to default to reg none, and that's the constant 15. So I'm not actually going to set DESD during when I don't have an instruction yet to write to an actual register. It's because we want things to start out where, you know, whatever we're putting in the execute stage before we fetch an instruction shouldn't actually do anything when it gets to write back, or else we're in trouble, we're changing the initial values of our registers, who knows how. And so we'll have this general pattern where everything we're doing with our, you know, in our previously, we would, you know, do things with these RA and RB signals directly. Now we're going to send things through pipeline registers. So, and that's going to be the change. And we'll just have all of our pipeline registers, which you could write separately, or you could write interleaved like we did here. All okay. And when we write the code for each part of the stage, all it's doing, note, is either setting output values for the next stage or manipulating built-in components that belong to this stage. So for decode, we say that the register file read input and output belong to the decode stage, so we manipulate them for our decode code. So that's doing add queue. So let's look at what's going to happen for our full processor. So I'm going to take our full processor from before. I'm going to draw boxes where all the stages are. And our basic procedure is that we're going to take the dividing line between all these stages, and we're going to add pipeline registers everywhere. Is there something I need to do first? Hint, it's probably similar to what I didn't need to do last time. Yeah?
Change the arrows to write back.
Yeah, so we need to have the rule that values go from one stage to the next. So that's one thing I definitely need to fix. So the signal goes to the next stage, with the one exception that, like, when we fetch a value, we send it. When we fetch a value to figure out the PC, we send the new PC not to the decode stage, but to the fetch stage in the next cycle. But this is in flow control. This is actually what value to write for this instruction. So it needs to go through every stage. So we're going to do it like this. I'm going to do the muxes that compute what register we write to in the decode stage. We will have reasons later on why it is really helpful to do that in the decode stage and not in the write back stage, even though you could take a correct processor which does it in the write-back stage, and it would work. Just be a lot harder when we handle some other special cases we'll deal with later. So we just plop registers across every place we cross between the stages, and there we go. And rather than drawing separate registers for each wire, I just run one big register to keep my diagram simpler. Yes.
And these registers are just to separate the parts of this cycle?
Yes. So the parts of the stages. Because remember, we do the whole, each stage is one cycle.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about the one from right back to fetch?
So, yeah, there's a question here. What about this PC update issue? So, and this is something where we're going to have to fix that later. So, because, you know, for a return instruction, which is why there's this wire that goes here, we don't know what that value is until several cycles later. So we're gonna deal with that later. And we're gonna have a solution which isn't gonna involve adding an extra register here, but is going to involve changing a bunch of things. Any other questions? But yes, I haven't dealt with flow control properly here. I need to do some extra work to make flow control work, like conditional jumps and return. Okay, so general rule when you're programming a pipeline like this is that you're going to always read your prior stage's outputs for each stage. We saw that. Send inputs for the next stage. And that's what happens here. So you're going to look at this picture. You're going to say, I'm writing the decode stage. So I'm going to read RA, RB. And I'm going to produce these two destination values. I'm going to do the register file operation and produce these two other destination values, which are the register values. So that's what you're going to write for each thing. And basically, the job of each stage is just to compute values based on its inputs, which come from pipeline registers, and send them to other pipeline registers. And also, if they happen to contain a component like a data memory, to do whatever operation that data memory needs to do for this instruction. And usually, that means you will only deal with either the components or things that are prefixed with your stage, except if you need to deliberately share between instructions. And one example of that is that, well, somehow we're going to have to get this value to the PC. That's going to be a case where we're going to violate this rule that we always deal with stuff that's prefixed with, you know, F in the fetch stage, because we're not going to do that to get that value. Okay, so one thing we didn't talk about much was control logic. With the add queue processor, it was easy. We always add. We never do memory operations. But that's not how things really work. So in our single cycle processor, when you're doing like an mRemove queue, an rRemove queue, you need to tell the data memory, do we want to read? Do we want to write? So can I just use the same logic for our pipeline processor? Can I just have my I code for my instruction memory? I have my code, which is like, you know, mem read bit equals, and if I code equals equals mr move q, you know, can I just reuse that code just as is, just copy paste it? So shaking your head. Any explanation as to why I might have a problem with that? Yeah.
I code will be different by the time we get to this.
Yeah. Stage. So this I code is going to be for whatever instruction is in fetch now, which is a few instructions later in the program. Not for the instruction which got to memory. So we're going to instead need to get that value from a pipeline register, because that's the only way we're going to learn what was read from memory at the time our instruction was in fetch, which means that when we read it from the instruction memory, because we need it later on, we're going to need to take the I code, put it in a pipeline register from fetch to decode, put it in a pipeline register from decode to execute, put it in a pipeline register from execute to memory, so when we get to the memory stage, we can have this control logic use the I code we read from the instruction memory. And that's going to be our general pattern. If you need a value for the instruction in some stage, and it's produced in a prior stage, you have to pass it through all the pipeline registers in between. You can't shortcut it, because if you take the value that's currently being read by the instruction memory, it's the wrong instruction. And similarly, like if you take the value that's currently being outputted by the register file, and it's probably the wrong instruction. So rather than having code which checks the I code directly, we're gonna read the I code, we're going to put it in a pipeline register, and we're going to send that value through each stage to eventually it comes out in the execute to memory pipeline register, and we compare it to figure out, do we want to read? So any questions on this idea? So this means that for things like, if you want, for the I code, we pretty much need that everywhere. There's all sorts of places we need to make a decision based on the I code of what to do. So we're probably passing it through all of our pipeline register banks. That even though I didn't draw it, we need it. And we can't just take it from the instruction memory because that's the wrong I code. And if there's any other values you want, so a common example might be you might want the destination register number. If you need that somewhere, you better be passing it through the pipelines. Or you need the source register number, you better be passing it through the pipelines. To wherever you need it, you know, it has to come from the instruction memory, but not the instruction memory that's currently there, the one that was there when your instruction was being fetched, the one you're currently processing. So any questions about this? Okay, so I've given the basics of setting up our processor. So we we divide it up into stages, we write the code for each stage where we just make our pipeline registers contain everything that's passed between the stages. We write code which reads from the pipeline registers and writes to the output pipeline registers, possibly using a built-in component that belongs to the stage. And everything seems fine, besides our issues of flow control, but it's not. We have one little problem. So here, I'm starting out with 800 and 900. I do add R8 and R9, and add R9 and R8. And what should happen here is I add R8 and R9. This means that R9 becomes 1700. Then I add R9 and R8, and this means R8 becomes 1700 plus 800, which is 2500. And if we look at what happens if we execute this with the pipeline design I showed earlier, we get that R8 becomes 1700. So we have the wrong answer. So my pipelining doesn't work. And the issue is that, well, I told you here that the second instruction adds R8 and R9, and R9 is supposed to be 1700, but we just read R9, and it's 900. That we should have had 1700 here, but we didn't because it hadn't been written yet. While we were reading it, this is when we were read 900, and here is when it's, you know, this is when it's write the 1700 we were supposed to have read. So we read it in the wrong time. We read it too early. We didn't see the value get written yet because it wasn't written yet. And this is called a data hazard. So this is a case where we get the wrong value for some data because our pipelining is doing things in a different order. That, you know, our pipeline implementation, the way we do this is first we decode the instruction 1, so we read R8 and R9, then we decode instruction 2, we read R9 and R8, then we write back for instruction 1, then we write back for instruction 2. But what our ISA specification says to do, what the written description of what the add instruction does, is not that it writes the value a little later, it's that it reads the values, adds them, and writes them in one, you know, all together. So we're expecting we read R8 and R9, then we write it, and only then do we move on to the next instruction. And this is a case where, because the pipeline is doing something in the wrong order, it violates our specification of what the add instruction does. So we're going to still do pipelining, but we're going to need to fix this problem. So we're going to need to do something that, you know, doesn't do this. And there are several possible solutions to this. I'm going to talk about two today and possibly a little bit of a third, and there's going to be one solution we'll spend a lot of time on called forwarding. That will be probably the main topic on Tuesday. But first I'm going to talk about the simplest solution to this problem. Easiest solution, it's real great. It's, you know, makes my HCL code really simple. And that's just change the ISA. AddQ, you know, I wrote that wrong. I said that it reads two registers and it writes out the value to the other register. That's not quite what it does. What it actually does is it reads two registers, adds them together, and three instructions later it writes the value. That's the new specification for add. Problem solved. We just fixed the ISA to work correctly with our processor. Everything's great. And you as an assembly or compiler writer just need to deal with that. That might mean that you need to add some NOPs where you previously didn't do that. But you know, you can do that. You know, not my problem. You just need to read what the instructions do and do it. And you might say, no one would do this. No one would ever actually do this, and that's not true. There are real instruction set architectures which use this design. where they said, we're going to use a pipeline implementation. We want to make the pipeline as simple as possible. So we're just going to say, here's how long instructions take to write values. Deal with it. You better make sure you don't read R9 until it's actually written if you expect to get the right result. But most of us would consider that this is a bad idea. That we don't like making the compiler's job a lot harder like this. It's also inconvenient in that this means that our ISA is kind of really tied to a particular design, that I chose three instructions later because I had a pipeline with four stages. What if I have a pipeline with five stages? Do I change my ISA again? That seems awfully inconvenient. So usually this isn't acceptable, but this is a real solution that some processors have used to this problem. It's to say, we're not going to have the instructions take effect immediately. We're just going to tell you what the pipeline's going to do. But this suggests probably the conceptually simplest hardware solution, which is that, well, if the compiler, you know, to deal with this problem is going to just add some knobs, just going to wait for that value to be written, the hardware could do that too. So you write add R8, R9, then add R9, R8. The hardware detects, oh gosh, that's not going to work correctly. So I'm just going to insert some knobs for you. Rather than reading from the instruction memory, I'm going to read a knob. I'm going to have a mux somewhere. You know, so I have my instruction memory, and I have its output. I'm going to have a mux where I have a knob. And I'm just going to have that mux put in a knob instead of whatever we read from the instruction memory. I'm going to do that for a couple cycles and also not advance the PC. And that's called stalling. So rather than execute R9 or R8 immediately, I'm going to recognize it's not going to work right. So I'm going to add some extra logic that detects this is not going to work yet. I'm writing R9. It hasn't been written yet. So it's not going to read the right value. So I don't change the PC. I leave the PC where it is. So I have some extra logic to do that, to not add to the PC, but send the same old value back. And I have some extra logic to, rather than read from the instruction memory and use those values, to send to my pipeline registers just a knob to do nothing. So questions on this idea? And so with that solution, we got something like this. I've marked with a star where we've incremented the PC, but we're not actually using that instruction. We've decided that we're going to instead stall. We're going to pass dummy values. So what I do instead is I say, OK, I've read this instruction. I look at this. I say, oh, R9 is here. That's currently something we're accessing. You know, we're trying to write to. I'm going to say, I can't do this instruction yet. And since I can't do it yet, I'm going to pass to these registers. You know, when I'm reading, instead of passing 9 and 8, I'm going to pass 15 and 15. I'm going to pass the none values like enough to do nothing. And that means that when these get to the write back stage, we're going to have nothing to do there. It's something called a bubble that we're going to write to register 15. It's not going to do anything. And we just wasted two cycles, but that's OK, because at least we got the right answer now. And if we didn't happen to be using R9, we wouldn't have wasted those cycles. So we still get a speed up on most programs where we usually don't read the value right after we write it, hopefully. And this is fine now with this stalling, because here, at the end of cycle 3, I write R9, and then during cycle 4, I'm reading it. So everything's great as far as correct answers, not as far as runtime. So another way of viewing that is we can say each stage has a particular instruction in it. So I fetch R8 and R9, it moves to the code, it moves to execute, it moves to write back. And while it's where it's in the code, I fetch add R9, R8, and I would move it onto the code, but in fact, oh, I can't move this to the code yet. It's not ready. I'm just going to stop it here, and I'm going to send a no-op to the code. And I'm going to keep doing that until I realize, OK, this is done. This is going to write back the value by the time I read it. It's fine. Any questions on this picture? I note that there's something equivalent I can do, which might be closer to what the textbook does, which is I could do this version instead, that I could send the instruction to the code, but say, oh, I can't keep it there. I can't move it on. I'm going to read the wrong value. It has the same effect. I still waste two cycles. I just waste them at a different time and need to hold more instructions back. And this needs more logic, but this might be easier because I can wait till later to detect, oh, there's a problem. It has the same effect, it just has different values in the pipeline registers. So, given that, so we run to add stalling. So we're going to add nops, we're going to have the hardware detect, okay, there's going to be a problem, I'm going to insert some nops. So here's something, some code, which has problems with hazards. That I'm writing R9, then reading R9, I'm writing R11 and reading R11, and if we don't do anything, we're going to read the wrong value of both R9 and R11 in the last two instructions. So how many stalls do I need? What's the minimum number the hardware needs to add in order to execute this correctly? So I'll give you a minute to figure it out. My hint for this is it's helpful to draw out some picture, kind of like this, of where each instruction should be. Who needs more time? Okay, so who thinks one cycle? Okay, one person, two. Okay, majority, three. Four or more. Okay, so anyone want to defend their answer? No, maybe?
Yeah, I say one stall.
Okay.
First you add R8, R9.
Okay.
And then you can run, you add R10, R11.
Yeah, so one thing to recognize is that there's no reason to stall between these two instructions because they're independent of each other. So wherever we're stalling, it's after that.
Yeah, one stall after you add R10, R11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the thing which trips both people up is you see, oh, we needed two cycles here, and we did. But we have to think about two cycles there, and we're saying they're separated by an extra instruction, so we need one cycle for each one, is the most common reasoning. But there's this nice benefit here that we've already spent that cycle doing this. And a good way of figuring it out is I'm going to draw out pictures like this, where I have the cycle number at the top, and I have what stage each instruction is in, that is, you know, You know, that means if we say something's in the fetch stage, that means the PC is outputting the address of that instruction. If we say something's in the decode stage, that means the fetch to decode registers are outputting the values for that instruction. And, well, we can take R8, R9, we just do that. There's no reason to stall, there's nothing before it, which is going to interfere. And R10 and R11 is independent, so there's no reason to stall yet. Then we look at add R8, R9. And if we look at that, we say, well, it needs to read R9. And that value is going to come from the write-back stage, and it's going to be available at the end of the write-back stage, and we need to have it ready by the time the decode stage starts. So I draw this line, and I need to make sure that this write-back arrow goes to the decode stage, and I need to add enough stalling for that to happen. So I can't do fetch DEMW, because then this arrow here would go to the execute stage, which is too late. We need to read in the decode stage. So I need to move it over one, and I do that by inserting a knot earlier. So I have that one cycle of stalling, which is that extra knot I inserted, which delayed the actual decode stage by one cycle. And that meant that when this write-back finishes and we read it into code, we're good. We have the correct value of R9. And once I've done that, it turns out, because I waited an extra cycle, that if I look at where the write of R11 occurs, that it's in time for it to be read by the now further delayed add of R11, R10. And probably the main reason people come up with two for this is you want to think of them, these as like two separate problems. But the problem is it's one processor, one string of instructions. That stall helps both of the hazards be resolved. That stall helps us wait for the distance between the write back and decode for R9 and for R11. So you only pay, that one stall deals with two hazards at once. So, any questions about this? Okay. So, that's our hazard, dealing with hazards with stalling. So let's say we're doing stalling. Let's figure out, like, are things gonna be worth it if we do stalling? So let's say I'm using stalling to deal with data hazards, and let's say I have 1% of my instructions need to stall 4 cycles, 2% needs to stall 3, 10% 2, 15% 1, and assume that this takes into account what I showed you earlier, where like one stall deals with two instructions, that I've like measured what happens over the whole program and counted each stall towards exactly one instruction that needs it, rather than even if it helps multiple instructions. So how many cycles does this processor take on average to execute instructions? So what's the throughput? Not the latency. So throughput meaning, you know, in X cycles we execute X instructions, that sort of thing. Someone tell me how to compute this. So, e.g., if I take 3,000 cycles, and execute 1,000 instructions, then I have 3 cycles per instruction is what I'm saying. Even if each instruction has a higher latency than that. Someone, any? Yeah.
Could you do that like a weighted average?
Okay, weighted average, sure. Of what would be the things we're averaging?
Number of
number of cycles and the percentage of times that they occur.
Okay, so you'd say 1% of the time we take how many cycles?
Four.
We take, so this is, let's settle, four extra cycles. So we take four, so the number of extra cycles we take is four. 2% of the time we take three. 10% of the time we take two. And 15% of the time we take one. And this is the extra cycles per instruction. How many cycles do we take when we don't have any stalling per instruction, like throughput-wise? One. So this any extra cycles plus one cycle per instruction without stalling gives us our answer, which I've hopefully computed exactly where I wrote that down, of 1.45. Another way you could think about this is rather than taking extra cycles, you could take 1% of the time, that 1% of the time we take five cycles in total, and 2% of the time we take three cycles in total, and so on, and 100 minus 15 minus 10 minus 2 minus 1% of the time we take one cycle in total. And you get the same answer. But the key idea is that the stalling is how many extra cycles do we take, and this gives us our performance. So given that, let's say that even though I had to do all this stalling, that I got my pipeline got a cycle time down from 1,200 picoseconds to 300 picoseconds. So I probably added five stages, given that I'm stalling for four cycles, but I made my processor not, five times faster cycles, but four times faster cycles. How much better is throughput overall? Yeah.
Around 2.76 times.
Okay, and how did you compute that?
300 times 1.45.
Yeah. So, this is 300 times 1.45, 300 picoseconds a cycle. Times 1.45 cycles an instruction is the picoseconds per instruction versus originally we had 1,200 picoseconds per instruction. That's what I got when I computed this a while ago. So we see that even with what is a lot of stalling, we're still faster. And that's because lowering the cycle time helps so much. That because we get so much, even though we get a lot less done per cycle, our cycle's a lot shorter. Okay. So there's one more type of hazard we haven't dealt with, and that's the control hazard. I mentioned we had like conditional jumps. We don't know where we go yet. Which do we do? I guess I shouldn't say equals if equals minus R9. Otherwise, so that, and we have the same solution we can use there. We can just insert a bunch of knobs, then we can figure out what instruction to actually fetch. So we'll use the same solution there, that will work. We'll have a better solution later on for dealing with this. So basically, we're just waiting for a couple cycles to be able to get the condition code values we need for our conditional jump. And then we actually do the conditional jump when we're ready. So we still do our PC update, but we delay our PC update until we have the values we need available, in this case, in our condition codes. And we're going to do the same thing for return. That for return, we need to wait to load a value. And we need to use that value to go here. So what we'll do is we'll send return down the pipeline, and we'll stall after the return until we learn where that return fetched. The address that return fetched that we need to go to. Okay. Any questions on this stalling case here or this one? And usually the way I'll represent it for these control instructions is we'll send the control instruction down the pipeline and we'll do the PC update when we have the results from later on in the pipeline. Like for RET, I send the RET down the pipeline, load the address in the memory stage, but I shortcut that address to the fetch stage after stalling while we're waiting for it, so we don't execute wrong instructions. Okay, any questions on this? Okay, so next time we'll talk about better solutions for hazards than stalling, which are going to be forwarding and branch prediction.